Welcome to the Word in 10, a devotional from Dwell Community Church. Scott Risley here with a short word from the book of Genesis. The story of Joseph spans 14 chapters at the end of Genesis. It's the gripping story of a man who experienced heartbreak after heartbreak. As a child, his family had to flee for their lives from his great-uncle Laban. Then they fled from his uncle Esau. Then they fled for their lives from Canaanites after his brother started a blood feud, only to watch his mother die in childbirth by the side of the road. He was abused throughout his teens by his older brothers before they finally sold him into slavery as Joseph wept and pled for his life. In Egypt, as a slave, he was sexually harassed, then sexually assaulted by his master's wife. Then he was wrongfully accused and unjustly incarcerated, where he rotted in a dungeon for about a decade. But you know the story, how in a single moment of time, God arranges for Joseph to be raised up to second in command of Egypt and put in charge of preparing for the coming famine. One day, Joseph woke as a prisoner in the dungeon and went to bed as the second highest man in the world. And now that Joseph has power, what does he do about his family who abused him and victimized him and did everything they could to take from him? Does he go back and punish his brothers? Nope. Does he send a messenger back to them to gloat and say, "Look at me now, baby"? Nope. Does he at least send a messenger back to his poor grieving father to let him know he's okay? Nope. You know, when you're the second most powerful man in the world, you could do those sorts of things. It wasn't that far of a journey back to the land of Canaan. What does Joseph do with this tremendous pain from his past? Some of us, we've been through what Joseph has been through, some elements of it. What does he do with the pain? Apparently, at first, he moves on with his life and tries to forget it ever happened. In Genesis 41:45, we read that he got a new name, Zaphnath-Paneah. He got a new wife who would have been high up in the Egyptian nobility. He had this great new job storing up excess grain throughout Egypt for 7 years. And God gave him two sons. He names his firstborn son Manasseh, the Hebrew word for to forget. In Genesis 41:51, he says, "It's because God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household." Joseph is trying to do what a lot of us do when we're hurt by others. He's trying to deal with something horrible from his past by forgetting it ever happened. He says, "I am Zaphnath-Paneah. My wife is Asenath. I am busy with my great career, second in command in all of Egypt, and my firstborn is named Forget You All." And maybe you're doing that too, trying to tell yourself, "I've risen above it all. I've forgotten them all behind." Maybe you're even a Christian now and you're like, "God has made me a new creation and God has given me this great life and has made me forget all those people who hurt me. What happened was tragic, but God has swooped in and made me fruitful." But is it true that Joseph has really forgotten? Or is he just trying to tell himself that? Is it possible he thinks about those people that hurt him all the time? How ironic that he names his son Forget You. Because every time he calls his son, he'll be reminded of the very people he's trying to forget. Manasseh, it's a Hebrew name. Every name in his life is Egyptian, except his son, the Hebrew word for forget. Joseph keeps insisting he's past it. And the more he insists that he is, the more he shows he is not past his past. By the end of the story, Joseph will learn a different way of dealing with the horrible events from his past. God will show him that forgetting isn't enough. God wants to teach him to forgive like God forgives and even to love his enemies. And perhaps God needs to teach us that lesson too. We can't just forget about it. We need to forgive even our enemies. Jesus says, "Love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you." I think we get confused about forgiveness. Forgiveness is not just trying to forget what happened, like Joseph tried to do at first. It's not minimizing the offense. "Well, they did their best. Could have been worse." It's not minimizing the person either. Tim Keller, in his excellent book on forgiveness, gives a history of views on forgiveness. He says the ancient Greek philosophers like Aristotle taught that when someone wrongs you, you respond, quote, not with forgiveness, but instead with contempt. Look down on them until what they have done becomes inconsequential to you. That's not what God tells us to do. Forgiveness, it's not being a doormat and letting them walk all over you, and it doesn't necessarily mean trusting the person either. Trust may need to be earned, especially in cases of severe harm. No, forgiveness starts with us receiving the forgiveness of God. Ephesians 4:32, be kind to each other, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, just as God through Christ has forgiven you. Once you've received God's forgiveness, then, as sinners saved by grace, we extend the same forgiveness to others. We've been forgiven so much, and Jesus says, the one who's been forgiven much loves much. We've been forgiven a huge, unpayable debt, and so we can forgive the much smaller debts that others have against us when they wrong us. You know, one promise we can always make is, I will not dwell in this wrongdoing. We will not keep punishing them or dragging out the past or gossiping to others about it. However, there are other forgiveness promises that could depend on the other person's response. I will not bring this up again with you. I will not let this come between us. You might need to have some hard conversations with that person. There might need to be some boundaries set up. There might need to be a process of earning trust. The rest of Genesis narrates the road to forgiveness for both Joseph and his brothers. We read about his reunion with his brothers, and Joseph does not reveal himself to them at first. He doesn't reveal himself until he's certain they're sorry for what they did. He even hatches a plan to give him the option to rescue his younger brother Benjamin from them before they can do the same thing to him that they did to Joseph. But in the end, he sees the work God has done in their lives. He breaks down and sobs, revealing his true identity and initiating reconciliation. A final lesson we learn from the story of Joseph is that forgiveness isn't easy. Even at the end of the book, you see the relationship with the brothers never quite healed. In Genesis 50, after Joseph's father dies, years after Joseph has forgiven his brothers and provided for all their needs, his brothers come to him again, begging for forgiveness, begging that Joseph not execute them now that their father has passed away. And it says in Genesis 50, verse 17, when Joseph received their message, he was furious with his brothers. No. When Joseph received the message, he broke down and wept. He broke down and wept. It's still painful after all these years. Then his brothers came and threw themselves down before Joseph. Look, we're your slaves, they said. But Joseph replied, don't be afraid of me. Am I God that I can punish you? You intended to harm me, but God intended it all for good. He brought me to this position so I could save the lives of many people. No, don't be afraid. I will continue to take care of you and your children. So he reassured them by speaking kindly to them. We see so many elements of forgiveness here. Joseph is emotionally vulnerable with them. He's not blocking them out. He's let them back in. Joseph points out God's sovereignty in the entire situation. He says, I'm not God. He's humble. And he can see how God let it happen, that God has used it for good. Joseph promises to continue to take care of their physical needs, and he reassures them by speaking kindly to them. This is not a cold, harsh forgiveness, but it's empathetic. It's kind. It's humble. Tender and kind-hearted, like Paul says in Ephesians 4. Lord, I pray for these listeners whom you love so much. I pray especially for those of us struggling with bitterness. I pray we would not try to simply move on, to minimize genuine wrongdoing, to dehumanize the person who hurt us. I pray we would experience and learn to rely on your infinite forgiveness, and that would empower us to forgive and love those who have hurt us.